The following interview with Colin Menzies, Jr. is one of a series of interviews on early Mill Valley history done under the auspices of the Mill Valley Library Association. The interviewer is Ruth Woodkey Leskohere.
Today is August 15, 1970, and we're talking to Colin Menzies. Are you the first, second, third?
Junior.
Colin Menzies, Jr. up at 417 McGee. Colin, the Menzies family was an early Mill Valley family.
My dad moved over in 1906, San Francisco, and the property has been owned by the family ever since. He came over right after the earthquake. During the Pan American Exposition, when it was over, he had several of the large trees brought over to Mill Valley.
His name was Colin Menzies.
Right.
Also.
Right.
And they were planted some on this property?
On this property, yeah, which they are still here.
One up here is a tree from India with the orange blossoms, the princess?
Yes, yes. I don't remember the name of it, but I know it was supposedly from India at the time when they shipped it over, and they brought them all over on horse and wagons at that time, of course.
Over on the ferries.
On the ferries, and then they brought them up by horse and wagon. And
the one out there, there's two kinds out there that are different. One is a spruce.
One's a swamp cypress, and the other one's a Cedar Deodora, which were also in the exposition.
I understand that many times people in Mill Valley would plant rows of, is it juniper alongside the property?
Cypress. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Just planted them. Nobody had any surveying or anything. If the neighbors decided they wanted to put up a fence, they'd just go ahead and get together and put it up, whether it was a foot this way or that way. And this is what made all the trouble when they went to, in future years, when they started surveying and really started to sell lots, you know.
Oh, because people had put up fences,
yeah,
just like in the old Spanish days of the Dons, like John Reed built his sawmill on Richardson's land at Old Mill Park.
Exactly. Yeah.
Many families seem to plant these cypress trees in Mill Valley.
A lot of cypress trees, yes. Uh-huh. And poplar trees also.
And yeah. Some of your training was in landscape gardening and somewhat when you were growing up.
Well, I was around it at all times, but then I went to, my first job was with Herman Hind, who was the landscape gardener, and I stayed with him and became foreman after a number of years for him, and then I gave that up and went to work at the Theological Seminary in San Anselmo, and I was the foreman of the grounds up there.
I see. And presently,
then from there I went to the Mill Valley School District and have been there ever since.
And you have a job of responsibility there.
Right.
It's more than just the ground. Is it the grounds and buildings?
The buildings and grounds.
The maintenance.
Yes, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. There had been some talk one time of renaming Miller Avenue after Herman Hine, and that didn't.
I don't know, such a wonderful person. Yeah.
Well, Miller Avenue comes from one of the founders of Mill Valley.
Right.
Miller, and then maybe someday a small park might be named after
him. Yeah, it would be a nice idea.
Didn't he give as a gift to the city of Mill Valley the landscaping on Miller? Or maybe he was hired for that. I thought it was a gift he gave.
I'm not sure whether it was a gift or not. I know he did it down near the high school, down that way. And well, from the lumber company down, the first section.
Yes.
He did, but I don't know whether it was a gift or whether he was reimbursed for it.
No, well, maybe future historians will dig that up.
Right.
Well, then were you born here in Mill Valley then?
No, I was born in San Francisco, but I was over here practically the next week or so.
Oh.
So I've been here ever since.
And would you want to comment on the changes in Mill Valley? The pictures we just looked at showed how many more trees there are. This was more like strawberry from early photographs.
There were quite a few trees. There was an awful lot of barren land, too. And a lot of grassy areas.
That are now covered with houses.
That are now covered with houses, of course.
And shrubs and trees.
And shrubs and trees. I know about the only thing I can really remember from way back there was when they used to have the horse and buggies whenever we wanted to come up the hill. There were no cars or anything. And then after that, the first taxi was a Model A, Model T Ford that Mr. Roth purchased. And the first time he brought my mother and myself up, I remember he took us over on Molino to take someone home. And he didn't know how to, it was the first day he'd gotten it practically, he didn't know how to drive it.
Oh, my.
So he pushed the wrong pedal, and my mother started screaming and said she was going over the bank and all this and that. And he said, "That's all right." He said, "There's redwood trees down there, they'll stop us if we go down." But we finally got back up the hill. And of course, Taillight Andy, who was the local cop at the time, and used to direct traffic at night downtown.
Was he just a volunteer, or was he really a...
Oh, no, he was a regular officer, yeah.
And do you remember his full name, Andrew...
Bickerton, I believe, but he was quite a character.
Well, do you remember any particular boyhood pranks that you want to mention? I mean, just typical of what the kids did as they were growing up here. Was it so different? Did you dam the creeks?
Yes, we dammed the creeks, particularly up on Blythedale side. We'd make
pool.
Yes, and then we'd make rafts and float around in the... was down by right across from where Hillside goes up.
Oh.
Down in there, and there was a long kind of a channel, and we dammed that up, and it was back quite a ways up.
That's a park now, then?
It's a
Miller
park.
Grove, or?
Yeah, it's a park now.
And that's where you could...
That's where we used to dam the creek up and really make a pretty good-sized pond out of it.
And this was usually in the spring, or do you remember?
In the spring, as a rule, yeah.
And if you fell in, the water would be cold.
And how it was cold, I should hope to tell you.
But would you try to keep it all summer?
We tried to, but every once in a while, somebody from the city would come and break it on us, and we'd have to go back and put it back again.
Oh, you know, now we talk about the prank, or so-called prank, of swimming in the reservoir. Understand that used to be fenced in, and it was the water supply, and not
right.
Too many people would swim there, would they?
I don't think so. I never was up on that section of the town very much.
But people who would climb over to swim in the drinking water supply, that just wouldn't... Did you ever hear about many who did that?
No, no.
It must have been kept pretty secret if
right.
They did.
Yeah. No, the only devilment we used to get up on the corner of Summit and Tamalpais, and roll tires down the flight of stairs that go right into town and watch them go down and bump into the station, and people jump out of the way when they saw them coming.
Oh, well, we're glad to hear about just something
Mrs.
like that.
Mrs. Evans used to catch up with us once in a while.
Oh, Letitia
but,
Evans.
But the police department used to be practically on the same spot where the present fire department is.
Yeah.
And they had an old car down there at that time that they had to crank to get it started. So we could hear them cranking it, so we'd be long gone by the time they got up on Summit. We'd be long gone.
Oh.
So they never caught up with us.
Do you remember your age then? Was this in your teens, or you think you were 11 to 14?
Around, I would say it was around 10, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Around 10 or 12. That was another thing we did from time to time when the train went around. There was a bend up at the top of Summit that it used to make. And Summit Avenue would go up above, not as far as Blackwell's, but it went up about to where the pavement stops.
Yes, where the bridge is.
Yeah, then there was a trail that went up and crossed the track.
Yes.
And we used to get up there and throw sand and stuff on the track to make the wheels skid so the train would just practically stop. They'd have to get out. We'd grease the tracks and they'd have to get out. That was considered something. But we didn't do that too often because it was too far to walk, you know.
Oh.
In 29, when we had the big fire.
You remember that fire?
Yeah, I should hope to tell you.
Did you stay with your house because the fire came here near Summit and McGee?
Burnt the lath house off that was attached to the back of the present house.
It burnt. The fire came that close.
Yeah.
And did your mother...
Burnt everything around
us. Were the women sent away or did the...
I had taken my mother down to Sausalito's to stay with my aunt. And then I came back and stayed with my dad. And we pulled the shingles off of the roof as they burnt. And
then you felt fire all around you?
It was just completely involved. It was just terrific. The wind and everything.
The wind was extraordinary that time?
It would just take globs of fire and lift it up and throw it down on a house. And one that was right completely surrounded with trees and all, it might not even bother it.
So the wind spread the fire on that fire of 29. Do you think...
That's the only thing that stopped it from getting our house was the wind change. In fact, Fort Baker had sent a lot of Army personnel up to fight it, and there was no water or anything. They couldn't do a thing. So they were all out in the lawn. They had swiped all my dad's liquor, and they were out in the lawn drinking liquor and making bets on whose house would burn next.
Well, what did your father say when they were...
Oh, he gave up.
He gave up because it was a terror.
There was nothing you could do.
Oh.
But the wind just completely turned around and went back up. Just switched right away.
Did you have a garden hose that you could use?
There was no water. And the only thing that saved the house above you... they took the water out of a fish pond they had and ran around with buckets and threw it on the roof whenever anything would land.
Many people left and didn't stay with their house. And some
9 out of 10 of them, the ones that left, they lost their house too.
But no life was lost in that particular fire, was
there? No. But there were people would drive up in trucks and ask you if you wanted your furniture taken. Downtown, everything was down in the main square of town from Benning on up.
People's things were taken, would they just come to help or would you hire them?
No, they'd just drive up in a truck and ask you if you wanted some help and they'd load everything in and you'd never see your things again.
Well,
they'd
these were not
off.
People you knew then.
No.
They were.
They just take off.
There are people like that who go out
right.
in times like this to steal
yeah.
and take advantage. But if it was a friend you could trust, that would be
different, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And so the square, which is now the parking lot, was loaded with possessions.
Almost everybody had a mattress on the top of their car or something. It was about all they could do. They didn't have time. It was so fast.
Had it been stormy or windy that
day? No, it was a real nice summer day.
Oh, which month was it?
July. I'm not sure, but I think it was the 3rd of July that it started. It started way up above Ralston White's place, the Garden of Allah.
Higher up the mountain, past
and
there.
The city council was having a big fight at the time with the fire department or the fire chief, and so they just more or less waited down at the intersection, and by that time the wind took it, just swished it down.
There are conflicting stories on this fire and why it got that way, and I understand people still many times don't agree, and some are still pretty upset. So, do you remember any other fires that were bad in Mill Valley? There was.
I know when I was going to Summit School, there was a real bad one over on the Edgewood Ridge over there. Took a whole bunch of quite a big area all along the ridge.
You are a volunteer fireman now, is that correct?
I've been since about 39.
And then I remember when we first moved here, we mentioned the fire at the distillery in Sausalito.
Oh, that was down in Sausalito?
Was it near Bridge? Near Martin Luther King School?
Right, yeah, just past there. That was the weirdest fire I've ever been in. All the alcohol blew up, and you were waiting in it up above your knees, and it was all on fire, and you were walking through this fire, and it was just a cool flame from the alcohol.
It didn't light
right
the clothes?
Above your boots, you know, or just below the top of your boots, and it didn't burn you. But it was just a weird sensation to be walking around in all this burning material.
So you were inside the building and trying
all the way around on the outside. They couldn't even get near to getting inside. It was too hot.
And you were waiting and burning alcohol.
Right.
What did it smell like? Grapes was
well, there. After a while, you weren't too sure what it smelled like.
Wasn't there something about some of the barrels exploding?
Oh yeah, the barrels that were sealed they'd get to a certain temperature and then just blow up.
We who have come since have, of course, changed Mill Valley. I remember when we came, there were cows grazing.
Oh sure, yeah.
What do you notice the biggest change is? Just more people and faster driving, and no ferries, and railroad's gone.
The more people and the change in the landscape altogether. I mean, people don't have the yards and the gardens like they used to have, you know. They have them, but they're small now because of the land costs and all, you know.
The taxes.
And taxes and all that.
And the cost of having a gardener come and
do.
And do the pruning,
which
we no longer can burn.
No, can't burn. We used to be able to go out and shoot rabbits or anything you wanted, you know. There was no law that way at all.
Oh, did you enjoy this as a youth to hunt? Did your mother cook these things?
Oh, yeah.
And there always were raccoons around. I don't imagine you hunted raccoons, though.
Nor
would you hunt the deer, probably.
No.
It was mostly for rabbits, which would be a change in the diet.
Yeah, the place was just alive with them.
Articles I'm writing, when the Richardsons first came, there were elk, mountain lion, bear, including grizzly, and flocks of birds, California quail.
Well, my wife saw a lion.
on a hike?
Yeah, up by the Double Bonnet. Walked right across in front of her.
Was this recently? But,
fairly recently, yes.
I mean, within the past few years?
Yes, uh-huh, yeah.
So there have been rumors that is one or two lions living up on the mountain, keeping out of sight. And they also say that never in California history has this type of animal been known to attack a human.
No, they're more afraid of you, I think, than you are of them. But this one brought, I had gone up the trail and she walked up the road and we were going to meet at the Double Bonnet. And I waited and waited and she didn't show up and I didn't know what happened. Finally she came around the corner and told me what had happened. And but she didn't know at the time what it was until Joe Kinney told her what it was. And then to make it worse, he told her that they always came in pairs. So she doesn't walk alone anymore up there.
There's a story, or it may have been true, that some of the men during the Second World War were asked to help build a fire break around Mill Valley, and I was kind of researching whether this
I don't remember was a big that. Thing. I remember the blackouts, and we all had to report down to the fire department. And one of my chores was to take one of the trucks up on Circle Avenue up to Phil Dietz's place. They didn't want all the equipment left in one spot. And you had to drive without any lights on.
At night?
At night, because they didn't want to have any lights showing at all. But
these were regular things you did at certain intervals.
Well, whenever they'd hit, blow the alarm, the siren for the blackout. In fact, my mother was the one that was that got the money together to get the first fire siren for Mill Valley. She went to the city council, and they practically laughed her out of the place. So she told him that she'd get 10 cents from everybody in Mill Valley. And they just said, well, good luck. So she went to the Bank of America and set up a fund. And she got on the phone and she called every house in Mill Valley. She got 10 cents from them. And I think she got around 870 some odd dollars. Time. So she went back to the media and told them she had $870 for the siren. Because before they used to have horses. And they never knew, they could never get in touch with anybody. They had no way, they had an old fire bell. But if the wind was blowing just right, you couldn't hear it at all. And they were having a lot of, in fact, what was instrumental in starting it on McGee Avenue, there was a house that burnt right down to the ground in nothing flat. And Mr. Thoney, that was the fire chief at the time, had told her that if they had a siren or some way of letting people know that there was a fire, they'd have the help because it was all volunteer.
So what one needed was a loud signal that could be heard everywhere in certain, and then they blow it sometimes in certain order to tell you what part of town.
No, that was the trouble with it. They couldn't code it. It was just a siren. It just blew, but it was real loud.
But the volunteer firemen would then assemble downtown.
They'd go to the firehouse, or they could call and find out where it was. You know, they'd know where to go anyway by the time the thing stopped blowing.
Heading back to that other fire, I understand that even though fire engines in the 29 fire came from the city, we could not couple the hoses.
Right, they had the wrong fittings.
The fittings were not synchronized.
Yes. Plus the fact it didn't do much good because there wasn't any water pressure. There were so many lines out all over that there just was no water at all. it was completely dependent on the elements, you know, like the wind changing and so forth.
That's the only thing that did it.
Yeah.
Wonder if the wind, do you think
the wind would... Plus the fact that there weren't any roads, like Summit was just an oil road, and a lot of the fire trucks from the city, they wouldn't even let them try to come up Summit at.
Because of the condition of their tires.
Right, and the roads were so narrow and all, they were just wagon roads, really.
I understand, too, that possibly during the Second World War, there weren't too many doctors here in southern Marin.
No, I remember, I remember when Dr. Hartman first came. Yeah, oh, gee, and I always wanted to get it from, but I never got around to trying to do it. He had when he first came, he had a 1935 Ford coupe. And that was really something at that time. Boy, everybody thought that that was it.
Was this about 1936 or 7 when he came, or was it closer to 1935?
No, it was around 35.
35, and so this was a new car.
Yeah. Oh, coupe. Yeah. And he was a real young, up-and-coming doctor. And he had his office up in the Keystone Building. And, we just thought he was it. Still do, as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm. I understand that he was about the only doctor that you had then during World War II.
Well,
and
yes.
It was a long time to...
Yeah.
You'd have to sit in his office for a long time, maybe 3-4 hours. Thought nothing of that.
No.
Well, we hope to interview him sometime and ask him to tell us some stories and any particular things. He's interested in history too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And,
very much so.
In certain parts.
Well,
this is a project because so many people have interesting things about Mill Valley.
And the interview with Mr. Menzies ended at that point.